New York Times bestselling author Alex E. Harrow is back with a fantastic new novel. It's called The Everlasting. This is a genre-defying story that involves a legendary lady knight and a cowardly historian. There is time travel and a quest. It made me think about our real-life historical figures and how the legends about them built over the centuries eclipse their real stories. But at the heart of this novel is a great love story between two people who at first glance should never have met, but eventually you'll see the two as inevitable. Alex E. Harrow, thanks for being on What We're Reading again.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a delight.
You are the author of the novels The 10,000 Doors of January, The Once and Future Witches, Starling House, and now your new novel is called The Everlasting. Each of these books are fantastic and like really unique stories. So let's start off by talking about where you find your inspiration for your work.
Thank you so much. I noticed in that list that my titles get shorter and shorter. Maybe I'm tired of saying them all. Julie, I was like, oh, saying those on podcasts is hard. I think a lot of what the author Nicola Griffith, who's one of my favorite writers, said about inspiration is that it's not a moment. She thinks of it more as a box, and that you are always putting things in the box, whether you know it or not. And then eventually something sort of amalgamates in there, and what comes out is your inspiration. So The Everlasting came from all of the lady knight or like girls with swords books I read when I was probably like middle school and up. That was absolutely my like favorite. The ones I reread the most were those. And they mixed with, you know, some grad school, some thoughts about nation building and empire and stuff like that.
I myself have not read a lot of lady knights books, and so it's kind of a new genre for me. Can you give us an example, because you're going to get into this with your book, The Everlasting, but can you give us an example of some of the genre that you're familiar with?
Yeah, my formative lady knight books. And see, here's something funny in sort of researching for this book. I thought that there was maybe just a boom of like lady knight books in the mid 90s that hit me. I assumed that like my love for them was a little bit manufactured. I was like, maybe Xena was really popular and then they had a bunch of like girl warrior books. But then when I went back and actually looked at the publication dates, I had found them myself and pulled them together over decades, right? So Robin McKinley's The Blue Sword and The Hero and the Crown were in, I think, the early 80s. The Tamora Pierce, The Song of the Lioness, I think is the quartet name. That is about, that's sort of the most popular one probably. And that's a girl who disguises herself as a boy to study an apprentice and become a knight. Read it. I can't tell you how many copies I went through. There was a book called Crown Duel by Sherwood Smith. There was, she's not really a knight, but really anything with a, where a girl had a sword was all I needed. Sabriel by Garth Nix. So it was all these like YA-ish books where it's kind of a girl's coming of age narrative where she specifically kind of studies or attains this particularly violent power of some kind. Like she's a knight, she gets armor, she gets a sword. She becomes powerful in a really particular way that hit for me because it was like a definitely a gendered type of heroism that I felt was a little bit inaccessible to me. That really fulfilled a specific dream of mine.
So in The Everlasting, we learn about Sir Una. She was an orphaned girl who became this legendary knight. She died for queen and country, and her conquests lived on through the centuries. I think a big part of this story is that it has us questioning what we know as legend versus what is the real story. It made me think about our own real world historical legends, what we know about them. We learn through high school, we learn through popular culture. But we're also learning that as we do more research, that these accounts aren't necessarily accurate. Can you talk about how you shape the story through that kind of lens?
Yeah, so this turned out to be the central problem of the thing, because I obviously, I think that every writer, you're going to return to what you loved when you were in middle school. That for me was always going to be a lady knight, but that involves returning to it as an adult. And then you kind of have to grapple with what a knight is in our imagination versus in history, right? So like our imagination version of a knight is sort of a code for like heroism and chivalry and nobility and loyalty and all of these like good, warm, fuzzy ideas that are kind of wrapped up in the concept of a good monarchy, the dream of a good king that you could serve that would be worth serving. But you know, in actual history, what is a knight is a much more technical and specific question and a depressing one because ultimately you have to face that there's sort of private security for wealthy landowners. And that's a little bit of a bummer. You know, like this hero vision of yours is actually sort of the embodiment of the state's monopoly on violence. And so I wanted to have my cake and eat it too. And I tried to write The Everlasting so that you would see the legend, the thing that we romanticize and that we love, and that you would see what the legend is covering up and what purpose the legend serves. Because I do think like I was intentionally mimicking real world, not one in particular, but real world examples of states or empires employing particular mythological histories to justify their present day actions. So, like what the British Empire did with the Arthurian myth cycle, like what present day American fascists do with their need to control a specific vision of American history, right? Like they're telling a really particular narrative that will justify who's in power now, who's not in power, who belongs, and who doesn't belong. So, trying to do all that in a made up world.
Another big part of the story is a love story. Sir Una is a knight and a hero. We just talked about what that really means, but in terms of the narrative, Sir Una is a knight and a hero. Owen is a scholar and a self-admitted coward. How do they complement each other?
Yeah, I read a ton of romance. I love romance as a genre, and I'd never written a book that was where that was this much of a central part of the plot itself is built around the relationship between two people. And I did it with a lot more intention than I maybe had thought. I thought maybe that romance would be easy in some way. I think we all have this slightly rude assumption in our heads that like, oh, you could just write a romance in there. You could just put a love story. But it takes a lot of thought about making two people that have significant barriers to being together, but also make sense and inevitably will come together. And I wanted their love story to feel like one that subverted a lot of the gender assumptions that go around straight romances. So like there's a lot of very dominant, assertive, in control types of men who would never be cowards. And there's a lot of like slim and petite and much younger women. And I don't think there's anything morally wrong with that. I can get down with many of those books, but I really wanted to like flip that a little bit, in particular because I think that the idea of a lady knight inherently has some gender subversion to it. So I wanted a romance that worked with that idea. And I hope it worked out.
What ties the story together, what kind of moves it forward, is that Owen finds himself traveling back in time to record Una's legend. Can you talk about balancing your writing process with following? I mean, there's got to be rules for time travel in any book. Can you talk about balancing that writing process with following your rules for time travel?
I would say in everything I write, the rules of magic or of the world are secondary to the emotions that I'm trying to make, right? So I invent the rules to serve that story. And then you do have to abide by them. You can't change them midway, but like that is how I build the story and the rules that I'm going to follow. I would say this was the most technically difficult book that I've written just because it's kind of a time loop system. So not only are you going back in time and changing things, but you're doing that multiple times and iterations, which means if you change one tiny thing in a scene in the beginning, you have to go back. It's going to have sort of ripples through the whole book. And so it was a monster and it took me forever. And I would not recommend writing a time loop novel.
Alex E. Harrow's new book is The Everlasting. Alex is a skilled storyteller, and she creates these wonderfully amazing and inventive worlds. I truly have not read a story like this before, and I enjoyed it so much. I hope you get a chance to experience it too. For What We're Reading, I'm Tammy Bobrowski.